Hey up, and welcome to the Strategy Sessions. It is episode 12 of this season, and I am here with another dogshit podcast for you to review Seth Godin's episode. If you're unfamiliar with what a dogshit podcast is, if you're a new listener, A little while ago I was talking to someone, my episodes are about an hour long, and they said it'd be good to have a podcast that you could listen to while you take the dog out for a poo in the morning. That's about a 30-minute podcast. So these shorter episodes are me reviewing the guest episodes, and it's just me. Who am I? My name is Andy Jarvis. I am the host of the Strategy Sessions, and I run a company called XMO Marketing. I do marketing strategy for firms that have a strategy problem. That's most firms, really. But, you know, I'm a marketing strategist and a professional speaker as well. Professional speaker, just thought I'd drop that in. If you're watching the video, have a look. I've got some Disney merch on. I am fresh back off the plane from speaking at a conference at Disney World in Florida. Which was an amazing experience. Americans kind of invented marketing, and it always feels mind-boggling and amazing whenever I'm invited to America to speak. I'm like, you know, you guys invented marketing. You put the sizzle in the sausage, and here I am, a bald British fella, being invited over there to talk about marketing. So I love it, and being invited to Disney, who do it really, really well. You wouldn't think of Disney for a conference venue, but I mean, you should. Food was amazing. The venue was great. Then the whole Disney welcome thing. In fact, I'll talk about that just briefly before I talk about Seth Godin. The first one of these I did was reviewing an episode by David Mannheim, who is a massive Disney fan, and who talked about how Disney have kind of let them down on the personalization journey by just scalping everybody for every penny that they're worth. And I can see that. I can see you get to Disney and everything costs a ridiculous amount of money. It's a premium venue, it's a premium attraction. I get that. But Disney's original pitch for Disney World was for it to be a place for everybody. And they've moved away from that. Have a listen to the episode with David. It's in the show notes or with him talking about it and how much prices have gone up and so on and so forth. And it was all pretty negative about Disney, if I'm honest with you. However, there is a bit of this that I've got to take my hat off to Disney. I'm a Brit and I hate the kind of forced, hey, sir, how's your day going? It's like, just leave me alone, right? I was happy enough going about my day anyway, and I didn't need you popping in my face and being all, you know, overly polite and friendly when, let's be honest, you don't really care. I hate all of that with a passion. There's nothing makes me turn to anger more than any of that. And I absolutely loved the welcome at Disney. I loved everything about it. I loved the way people interacted with you. I loved the way every member of staff, or crew member as they call them, took the time to kind of ask how your day was going. It was weird because every bit of my body was going, you should hate this. But it was done so flipping well. Everything about the experience at Disney was incredible. And you can see they put the money into that. Now, that's not to say that they should keep putting the prices up and scalping everybody for every penny that they're worth. Hard no to that. But I think that what they do really, really well. And I think the last episode was probably a look at maybe the negative side of Disney. But I'm, you know, credit where it's due. I was really, really impressed with how they did that. And also really, really impressed with the brazen cheek they have of charging such high prices for certain things, including $60 for a long sleeve T-shirt. But here I am, sucked in and I bought it. Anyway, so from David Mannheim to Seth Godin, a link I know David will be over the moon with. And I wanted to review the episode with Seth and kind of where do you start? I loved it. I really enjoyed the episode. Talking to Seth was maybe a career high, I would say. And listening to his insight into marketing, into where his career's gone, into what needs to change, it was eye-opening. And there were some really interesting things in there. If you've listened to the episode, which I'm sure you have, there is a link in the show notes if you haven't. But if you've listened to the episode, you'll notice there's a couple of bits where I disagree with Seth. And we have all very professional and well-meaning, but debate about things that have been said in the episode where I have a slightly different perspective to Seth. And you know, if you don't know me, you'd be thinking, who is this guy and who does he think he is disagreeing with Seth Godin? But look, we're more of an art than a science and in marketing. And, you know, come at me if you want to fight about that. But we are definitely more of an art than a science. And that means that there's no definiteness. This isn't physics. It's not maths. 2 + 2 does not always equal 4 in marketing. There are different perceptions. Context is really, really important in marketing. Hence the classic it depends answer to almost every question that we ask, that we get asked. So there are different ways of tackling problems. And there was two particular points where I kind of picked Seth up on a couple of things and disagreed with him. And the first one I want to talk about is Tesla. In a fight between two of the current marketing grandees, Mark Ritson and Seth Godin, in a fight to the death. I don't think such a thing would ever happen. But what I, having read Mark Ritson's work on Tesla, and I think I'm probably more on the Ritson camp on this than the Godin camp. And the basic premise is Tesla have started cutting prices. Now, I hate talking about Tesla. It feels a bit tech bro, let's talk about Tesla all the time. But it kind of came up naturally in the discussion. And I think there's a really interesting point that is worth diving into, which is what I want to do now. So it's not, yes, we're talking about Tesla. And yes, you're probably rolling your eyes going, oh my God, he's on about Tesla. But I have no insight into Tesla. I have no background into it. I don't look at their performance stats. All I know is I'll probably never drive one because the guy who runs the company is an idiot. That's the only way my views on Tesla. But we're talking about pricing particularly. So the background to this is Tesla launched one of the first mass market electric cars, you probably know that, and kind of got a huge leap on the rest of the market, miles in front in terms of software, hardware, desirability, while the rest of the car industry was sort of stood around holding its thumb, sucking its thumb, going, well, why would we build an electric car? We make X billion a year from selling diesel and selling petrol. And, you know, we can't make batteries work, and kind of said this wasn't their problem. Tesla just hoovered up the market and did, let's be honest, an amazing job at it. They had futuristic designs. They had great technology in their cars. And yeah, you know, a fairly eccentric leader who kind of claims to be anti-government, but seems to be quite happy with his hand out taking their subsidies. But by and large, got ahead of everybody else. I would say we probably have the European Union to thank for the change in that. And again, I'm not a car market analyst, but the European Union decided that net zero goals, what we were going to do was force car companies to build electric cars, because by a certain point in time, which I think is 2035, they're going to ban the sale of what's known as ICE, internal combustion engine cars, diesel and petrol, or gas cars, if you're listening in America. And they told them they had to do that. That made the European companies jump really far forward because their whole business was now at risk. So you've suddenly got Volvo, Volkswagen, all these companies, Volkswagen Group, so that's Audi and Seat and Skoda and all those things, all of a sudden putting out huge industry-leading cars, cars that are actually pretty good and similar to Tesla, or maybe in some cases better than Tesla, Fiats and all the European companies getting there. America, I'll be honest, was probably a little bit slow out of the blocks. Your Ford, General Motors and companies like that. Chevrolet pulled out of the British market and the European market because they couldn't make the cars as efficient as the European standards were. So you kind of got all this global stuff going on in the car market. But if you look at the car sales figures, you see all these other companies suddenly catching up. Because once you've bought a Volkswagen, it's really easy just to buy a new Volkswagen. They make it easy for you the way they finance it and all that sort of thing. Then the Chinese and the Japanese automakers made a big dent in that as well, your Hondas and Toyotas. Then the Chinese came to the party. Huge companies like BYD and others like that have been making cars in China using electric batteries. And where do all the batteries come from? China. Oh, so they've got supply chain advantages and things. And you've got all of a sudden Tesla's market of no one's making an electric car that's worth having is now I've got loads of options as a consumer. In this market, Tesla started cutting prices. One of their models, I think it was the Model 3, let me just double check, had been reduced by, in UK terms, about £10,000. So it had gone from about 7,000, anyway, I can't find the exact figure, but it had gone down, I think, from sort of 50 to 40 or something like that. Nope, there we go. Yeah, so the Model 3 had a starting price drop from 48,500 to 43,000 in round numbers, and the Model Y Performance dropped from 68,000 to 60,000. So you're talking a kind of an £8,000 drop, which is a chunky percentage number as well. And they cut the prices. So within this, I put this question to Seth along the lines of, as a classically trained marketer, I think this is the stupidest thing they could have done. They've cut the prices at exactly the wrong time because they're going to have all sorts of problems from that. They're going to have less money coming in. They're going to have less chances and opportunity to innovate because their margins are under pressure now because they've just taken £8,000 off the bottom line and so on, which is influenced by some of Mark Ritson's writing, which I'll come to in a moment. Seth had a very different view. Seth referred to Jeff Moore's phrase about crossing the chasm. Now, obviously, you gave an example of kind of digital watches, which are much lower ticket, obviously, than a car. But the point is that when you're making a new technology, the cost to buy this new technology is usually huge. It's horrendous. You know, you think of the first digital watches or the first PDAs like the Apple Newton, I think Seth mentioned, were horrifically expensive. And all digital technology costs a fortune. But as we work out how to produce that technology quicker, the price falls and you get there. And he referred to crossing the chasm as the people who've bought a Tesla initially are kind of the super fans of the brand and super fans of wanting to do something to save the planet. And there is a chasm that Tesla have to cross now. They have to, so everyone who wants one of those cars has probably got one now. So they then have to make the rest of their cars attractive to everybody else. And they have to cross that chasm and get there and make it mass market and get people to want to buy a Tesla who were never considering it now. And that's the challenge that they face. So cutting the prices is just what happens when you cross the chasm. The price of a digital watch fell from, I can't remember what he said, maybe like $1,000. And now, you know, it costs, you know, $10 because over time the price has fallen. And that's the chasm that they need to cross when you do that. Okay. So my disagreement was actually, I think they've kind of hit onto a classic mistake that people who don't study marketing, and Musk is kind of famously disparaging. I don't think they have a marketing team at Tesla. He says it's not important, advertising's not important, and so on and so forth. And so what they've done is they've cut prices. Now, to me, I think the first problem that they have is you cut the price and you take 10-ish percent off the top line. That's not 10% off the bottom line, because all that 10% that you've taken off is all coming straight from your bottom line. So you might have had a 30 or 40% impact on your profits by doing that. That has a roll-on effect. You want to innovate. Tesla hasn't really released a new car design, a new car model, in a lot of years. So how are you going to do that? You need to innovate. You need to put new technology in it. You need to redesign it. What does that? It costs money. Like, building cars costs a lot of money. There's a huge investment up front. Regearing production lines, letting people know it's coming, moving it on to people. You've got all that to do. Costs a lot. And to do that, you've got to do that at the point where you've just started hitting your profits. And you might say, oh, we're not looking to do that. Well, it probably should be as an innovative company, but okay, maybe that's not an issue. But it has a huge impact. The other thing is that I thought as well, it impacts the brand. Tesla was a premium car brand. It is a premium car brand. What don't premium brands do? Discount very often, because if you're discounting, you're suddenly trying to say we're every day. And I think this is, again, where the Ritson view and the Gordon view kind of contrast it. I think Seth's point is if they want to become a car for everybody, they've got to cross that chasm. And Ritson's point is you'll never be a car for everybody. I don't know which car model has the highest market share in terms of all cars, but it's probably like 4% or something like that. Because if you think of all the different types of car that people buy, and Tesla, with the way they build cars, probably never going to have a huge market share anyway. So all they're doing is just killing their brand and killing the price. I went back to Ritson's original piece, again, link in the show notes, where he talks about, I think, 7 or 8 things. He talks about negative signaling as well as another problem. So this is a point where you start to tell people, it's a brand point. You start to push the price down. People are like, oh, what's happening with that brand? Yeah, as a Yorkshireman who likes everything as cheap as possible, I don't think it's the biggest point, but it is certainly a point worth looking at. You've also got user disillusionment, which is easy for me to say, where if you bought a Tesla last year and you paid £70,000 for it and you find out that 3 months later that same car is going for £60,000, you're going to be a little bit pissed off. And that has an impact on your brand association. But also then you start to have this impact on future customers going, well, if there's a discount now, maybe I'll just wait until... So in the UK, car registrations happen every year, twice a year, and that usually has an effect on pricing. So when a new registration year comes out, the price falls. Oh, well, the price is falling now. I'll just wait until the new reg comes out, because the price might fall again because it's now an older model. So you suddenly have this impact of people then start to wait for the next price offer. And then there's another effect, which Ritson talks about, the bullwhip effect. So you cut your price. All of a sudden, everyone who was going to be in the market for a Tesla. So some people will wait looking for another discount, but some people will run towards you. I was thinking about getting a Tesla. I've just seen the price has fallen £10,000. I'm going to go buy it. Well, hey. So you look at your order sheet and your orders are going up and you go, this price promotion has driven more orders. Wonderful. Fantastic. Isn't this great? The problem is you've just moved everyone down the funnel really, really quickly. and nobody's joined the other end of the funnel because you haven't done anything to rehash that. You've just put a price promotion in at the end. So now you've got nobody coming in. But all you can see that your data tells you is you go, oh, so my data tells me we ran a price promotion and we sold 30% more cars than we were expecting. So now we've got no demand. How do we get promotion? How do we get sales running again? We put on another price promotion. So you've suddenly got yourself into somebody, maybe Ritson, maybe someone else calls it the crack of price promotion. You're now addicted to it and you can't get off price promotion because you've just chewed up all your demand. We've talked about the profit impact. We've talked about the brand impact. And the other thing is you can start a price war. Somebody with the market leverage that Tesla does almost becomes like an anchor point for people's pricing. We just need to be a little bit cheaper than Tesla. So if you're selling a Renault or if you're selling a Volkswagen or if you're selling a Chinese car or whatever, or a Honda, then you suddenly go, well, we like to keep our prices just a little bit below Tesla's because that's where we see our demand. We don't have maybe the brand that they do in electric cars and EVs, so we'll just sell cheaper than them. So you put your prices down and they put their prices down. But then all you've done is everyone's just reduced their profitability. But you're not selling anymore because the customer coming to the market goes, oh, I can get a Tesla for $6. Oh, but I can still buy a Renault for $50. Oh, great. So you've suddenly started a price war that you really didn't want to fight. You didn't want to get into. And now to fight a price war, you need money. You need a brand. You need new products. You need all these things, which you can't do as well because you've just hammered your bottom line and impacted your profitability. So to me, the price war, not the price war, but the cutting of prices didn't feel like the right thing to do. Now, this is a very outsider's point of view. I know sometimes in big companies, they'll have volume targets to hit and, you know, deals with battery manufacturers or tire manufacturers or whatever it might be. That means that they've got to hit those numbers to be able to get the things at a certain price. That might be behind it. But it feels like, I, as a sort of on the Ritson side of this debate, I think that's where I would be. I wouldn't have cut prices if I was Tesla. But Seth's point is that you got to cross the chasm. And EVs are coming to that point. Electric vehicles are coming to that point. More and more people are in the market. In Europe, you'll not be able to buy a petrol or diesel car anymore in 10 years' time-ish. And all of a sudden, being the first to cross the chasm actually makes you the first mover advantage. Tesla was the first with the geeks and the green fans who wanted to get a car. Brilliant. Can they be the first to go truly mass market with it? That's the crossing the chasm point. Where do you stand? Are you Gordon? Are you Ritson? Are you neither? Do you not really care? I don't know. I'd be really interested. My details, as always, are in the show notes. If you want to, and there'll be a LinkedIn post about this. If you want to jump into to that discussion, send me an email. Everything's below in the show notes. Send me an email. Have a look on LinkedIn. Find the post and comment on that. I'd be really interested in your thoughts because we're an art, not a science. I think there is merit in both points. I lean more towards the Ritson side of things. Personally, I think Tesla's future is as a premium brand. I just don't see them as a mass market brand. Now all the major car companies are moving into selling EVs. They've got huge network benefits to that. They've got a dealership network already existing. They've got millions of customers who they have finance deals with on PCPs, certainly in Europe anyway, personal contract plans, which mean it's just easier to roll in with the same company over and over again rather than it is moving elsewhere. The friction to staying with your current car provider is much less than it is to move. So if you've got a great EV for sale from a company you already have a car with, that's the path of least resistance for you as a customer. So I think Tesla, any Tesla driver I know loves their car, absolutely loves it. They make an amazing vehicle, fantastic. So I wonder if the future for them is as a premium auto retailer. To make that statement properly, I think you need to be on the inside. You need to look at the data and you need to know what their strategy is as a company. I have none of that. I'm just an idiot looking at from outside. But I'd be interested in your thoughts. Are you Team Gordon? Are you Team Ritson? Do you not care? Do you think there's a different team altogether? Let me know your thoughts. What else did Seth talk about? He talked about storytelling, which I want to briefly touch on. He talks about at the end how we need to tell, marketing needs to tell better stories because there are sort of some issues around. And he posted on his blog recently about the problems with bottled water, how it becomes the story we've told ourselves over the time is that it's a status symbol. It shows who you are. It can kind of, the brand can communicate part of your personality. Fiji water became a way of status signaling that you have money, things like this. But actually, and when you start saying, yeah, but we shouldn't drink bottled water, why not? Because the bottles wash up on the shore in countries far, far away, and look at the huge environmental damage that they're doing. And the story people tell themselves is, yeah, I put it in the blue bin and recycled, so it's not my fault anymore, right? I've done my thing. I've done the thing you asked me to do. The change that he had noticed is that there'd been some research out recently that says that there is a huge, massive, I can't remember the number, 10, maybe 1,000 times more plastic in water that you drink from water bottles than we'd ever previously thought. And Seth's view is that this is actually the start of the end of bottled water, because now the story that we tell people isn't, you shouldn't drink bottled water because it will do some harm to a country over there that you don't know on a map. It's drinking bottled water could well be poisoning you, could be causing you a problem. And your children that you're giving it to could be causing them a problem. Oh. Now it's no longer I put it in the recycle bin, it's, but this is having an impact on me. And it's a really interesting view on that. And I think storytelling is hugely important for marketers. And I don't just mean storytelling in how do we create an ad. I think marketers need to be better at storytelling all across the organization. What's pitching? Storytelling. And I think managing upwards can be down to storytelling as well. The number of times I've been involved in conversations with marketers where they say things like, but you know, when the board see it, they don't care. They're not interested in click-through rates, or they don't know what this thing means. They don't know what that things mean. Because you're not telling them the right story. Tell them a story in a language they understand and a way that they can get on board with. Now, JP Castlin, previously of this parish in season 2, I think, links below, asked me last summer, July 2023, if I'd write for his strategy and praxis blog, which I was over the moon to do. It's one of the few email newsletters I've signed up to that I actually read every week when it comes in. And I was like, yeah, great. I'll write a piece on storytelling. And, oh, shit. You've got to write a piece on storytelling. You've got to be able to tell a good story. So I was like, I'm going to do this. Spent a lot of time thinking about it. And I wrote a piece, I've linked to it below, that is about how and why we use storytelling and how we can do it as strategists to be able to make organizations come along or help organizations come along with the road that we've plotted for them and the course we're trying to do. I believe organizations are inert by default, right? People don't come in a morning in a big organization or in any organization, how do we change the world today? Some people do. But most of them are just looking at how do we get out the door at the end of the day or these are the or do the thing that they need to do. But when you multiply that up, you end up with an organization that generally doesn't want to move unless there is a force applied to it. There's some physics concept, isn't there, about applying Newton concept, maybe about applying force to it until it goes. You need to apply that. You need to get people to move. You need to get those micro movements to get activity to happen. And to do that, I think you need storytelling. I think you need to bring people along a journey so that you can paint a picture of what the future might look like. Hence, I say might because I know we can't actually predict the future. But we have to let people know what that future might look like so that we can help start that movement. Because momentum is hugely important when it comes to marketing. I've said huge far too many times in this podcast, haven't I? Right, no more. I'm going to have a huge swear jar. Otherwise, I'll have to put a pound in every time I say the H word. But momentum is important. If you don't get momentum, all the best strategies just stop. They just grind to a halt because, well, they haven't started moving, actually. They don't grind to a halt. They just don't go anywhere. You need to create momentum. And to do that, I think you need to tell people stories. So it was really nice to hear Seth say about the value of storytelling and how that works. And he actually gives a negative example of how it's used to kind of reinforce climate change. But I think it's really important that we can use storytelling. One really important thing that I mentioned in my piece on strategy and praxis blog is I talk about religion a little bit, and not to belittle anyone's religion, but religion is great storytelling, lots of great storytelling. What's the one thing you never hear any religious preacher use ever? Just let you have a little think about that. Percentages. I've never heard a preacher. I've seen a couple of different religious ceremonies in Islam, in Hinduism, no, Sikhism, sorry. I have seen a Hindu ceremony as well, and Christianity and all the sorts of different flavors. Never seen anybody give a speech from the front of the stage and talk about percentages. So think about that when you are giving your works process. If you've got to give a percentage, you have to tell the story behind it. Every number tells a story. Don't just batter people to death with percentages because that's not telling them a story. That is firing bullets at them and beating them to death, right? So have a think about that. And my last point on what Seth said, What else should we pick on? There was one other thing, kind of a bit going back to what I just said about momentum. We were talking about climate change and Seth's view of that. We need to tackle the big things first. And we do 100% agree with that. We've got to tackle the big things first. Leaf blowers, for example, leaf blowers for half an hour or something, or an hour, use more gas than or emit more pollution than driving across America, which was mind blowing in terms of the stats. But I asked the question, I said, yeah, but do we not need to still encourage people to do the recycling thing, to make those small changes in their lives? Because that creates the category, creates the awareness and the system where people are ready for that change to happen. I even quoted Gandhi, which is, if we want to change the world, we've got to change ourselves. So is that not where we need to be? And Seth made a good point, which again challenged my thinking on this, which is actually that's because we've been conditioned to believe that. And he's not disagreeing with Gandhi on most things, but just in terms of climate change, the phrase carbon footprint, our own carbon footprint, was an advertising phrase, I think by Ogilvy and Mather, for one of the oil companies, and how that has been used to make us think that all we need to do is just change our carbon footprint slightly, or stop us from being able to call for bigger change until we can make our little change, has actually stymied any major changes in the industry. And so we need to forget about the small changes and we need to go to the big changes. Now, you know, personally, that doesn't mean I'm going to stop doing the things I'm doing. I've someone who's just come back on a flight from Florida. It's hard for me to sit here and say that, oh, yeah, I should do all the things. I'm still flying for work. So then it's like, oh, well, that makes me a hypocrite because I'm not reducing my carbon footprint. And all of a sudden, what Seth said made perfect sense. I cannot ask for big change in the system because I'm not making small change myself. Maybe we should change concrete and cows because that's where a lot of the pollution comes from. What about the shipping industry, all these things? But I'm not allowed to join that debate because I fly too much. Got it. Now I see what he means by that point. So it's good to have these discussions. It's one of the reasons I have the podcast because I love having these discussions. What's your view? Tell me what your view is. I would love to hear it. I just want to give one more shout out to a friend of mine before I finish and before I wrap up this podcast, Simon Harper. Right at the beginning of the Seth podcast, I referred to email as the cockroach of the internet. Now, Simon is an email marketer, so he particularly loved that. Just to attribute that quote properly, it was by Stuart Butterfield, who is the co-founder and I believe currently the CEO of Slack. So while it's a beautiful quote, maybe the man who's trying to kill email with an instant messaging product is probably not the most impartial of observers to be making that. So thanks to Simon for loving that quote and making me go and dig out the original citation for it. Email the cockroach of the internet. Do we need to be better storytellers as marketers? Should we change ourselves before we try and change the world? And who's right? Ritson versus Godin in a battle to the death. Let me know what you think. Love the chat, love the debate, social media, I'm on Threads, Instagram, LinkedIn. I do have a Twitter X page, but I never use it because the same idiot who runs Tesla runs that. So I've had to come away from there, sadly. But just send me an email. If you got this by email, just hit reply to the email. You find me everywhere. So look in the show notes, see where you get, and lovely to have you along. Got another episode out soon. I'm not going to tell you who it is. It'll just be a nice little surprise for you. Till next time. Thank you.